listening to Beside Stillwater's Netcast, a tabernacle service of Stillwater's home churches and worship center.
That the Hebrew word for remember does not mean something that you have to draw on from the past. That that you're able to remember future things. If truly what it means is to be mindful. And being forgetful is deliberately not being mindful. I mean, in the past few weeks, we've talked about rich young rulers, and we've talked about the forgiveness of blindness. We've talked about some legal things that people really just wanted to hold on to law. Because in truth, law is easy, and law is something that we can skate around. If you show me a good law, I'll show you a good way of breaking it. I'll show you a way of manipulating it so that I don't really have to follow it, or I'll find the loophole that'll exonerate me. Maybe I won't be truly guilt-free or guilt-less, but I'll get away with something. Laws are imperfect. But what we're talking about this week is, in the same way, another person coming to Jesus. One of the scribes, one of the lawyers, one of the guys who knows the law really, really well. And he's heard these conversations. He knows what Jesus has been talking about publicly. And one of the scribes came near and heard them disputing with one another, and seeing that he answered them well. That's important. This guy is in agreement with Jesus. So he asked Jesus, "Which commandment is the first of all?" Jesus answered, "The first is, 'Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one.'" You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all of your strength. The second is this: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these. Then the scribe said to him, "You are right, teacher. You have truly said that he is one. And besides him, there is no other. And to love him with all your heart and with all your understanding and with all your strength, and to love your neighbor as oneself, this is much more important than all the whole burnt offerings and sacrifices." When Jesus saw that he answered wisely, he said to him, "You're not far from the kingdom of God." After that, no one dared to ask him any questions. Why wouldn't they ask him any more questions? Why would this little discussion put the other lawyers in check? How does this set them on notice? I think it has to do with remembering. And it's something that we talk about a lot. He was talking about in the film about how we didn't go through the Exodus. We're not the children of Israel that saw the water, the walls of water, and the chariots, and we weren't the ones who were lifting heavy bricks from Pharaoh, and we're not the ones who were persecuted in that way, and we're not the ones that were terrified, you know, pleading, is this ever going to be over? Are we ever going to be able to leave? Can we just escape this? God will do anything. We're not the ones who made it over to the other side, you know, and then began to want to be Egyptian all over again because of fear of the future, you know, this deliberately forgetting future things, deliberately forgetting, being mindful of the God who just brought you out. When Jesus is talking to this lawyer, there's a couple things that happen. Number one is that the lawyer is asking a question that isn't really being asked. What he's really saying is, what's the bare minimum? Because we do that. We say, well, what's the important thing? Well, at least I don't do that. I do that, but at least I don't do that. And somehow or another, we grade ourselves on a curve that way. You know, how many laws are we good at keeping? And kind of write the other ones off as being unimportant, the ones that we don't have to worry about. And in this church, guys, we got to be honest with ourselves and with God about that stuff. Because it's easy for us to say, well, I don't do that. It's easy for us to point to folks around us and say, look what they're involved in, and kind of give ourselves a pass at stuff. Is being judgmental really that much better than alcoholism? Is pride really that much wider than a crack addiction? Each one of us needs to be mindful of God. Each one of us needs to be mindful of who we are connected to, because while we didn't go through the Exodus, we are part of that great cloud of witnesses. We are people who can understand, who can be mindful of the God who brought our brothers and sisters through the Exodus. Because that is part of our heritage. And let's broaden that, because we can be mindful of what it really means to accept somebody who's not like us. Foreigners and strangers. Because that's who we're called to be if we are called to be people of the temple. If we're called to be people who worship, truly worship God. Who truly believe when Solomon says that when the foreigner looks to this place and prays, Lord, hear their prayer, whether they're Jewish or not. And that's the truth of who we need to be. That's who we need to be mindful of. We need to be mindful of that God. We need to be mindful of when we were the stranger. We have to remember that deliberately. Remember where we came from and deliberately remember where everybody else came from and deliberately be the one who will offer that grace and peace. So what the lawyer says is, what's the important law? What's the one that'll maybe give me a pass? If I just do one or two things, there's sort of a downplay to the rest of the law. And Jesus does not argue with him about it. He asks the question. And so Jesus gives the answer. And in a way, I really think that this scribe is testing Jesus. Because he wants the answer to be something. He's hoping. You can almost hear the longing in his voice when he's asking this question, because we've come from people who wanted power. That's what we're in context. That's what we're talking about. The disciples wanted to be powerful people. Rich people wanted to be able to hold on to their wealth. What do I need to inherit eternal life? What are the laws? What are the set of laws that I need to keep? Oh, I can keep those. And last week we have a very simple blind man who says, I want to leave my way of life. I have to beg because I'm blind. And in our context, we have people that will be comfortable with that. And this blind man wasn't just saying, I want to receive my sight. I want to not be blind anymore. He's saying, I'm willing to not beg anymore. I'm willing to become productive. I'm willing to become, and what does he do? He follows Jesus. And this week we have, coming off of that conversation, a scribe that's saying the same thing. He's saying, what's the most important thing? What do I got to do? Because no doubt, he understands. Being a scribe, maybe he's one of the guys who has been in the system for so long that he can't stand it anymore. He sees the judgment. He sees the rich young ruler being able to be the guy who's the good guy. He's the hero to the people in the synagogue. After all, God must love him more than anybody else. He's rich. He's done all the right things. He's powerful, like the disciples wanted to be. Maybe this scribe has seen that. Maybe he's seen, in our context, he's seen church where everybody comes shiny white and nobody really has conversations about what I'm struggling with. Only the things that the orthodoxy says is okay. You know, I suffer from anger. I have anger issues and I'm getting over it, you know, God willing. Oh, I'm being tempted. I work with somebody who just is difficult. But I'm getting over it. I'll pray for them. Those are the conversations that we end up having in church. Church as usual. And maybe this scribe was sick and tired of hearing that. Maybe he's tired of hearing everybody say, you know what? I know the sacrifice to bring when I do that, and I know how to atone for my sin. I know how to make good on that. And what he wants is, what he's longing for in the questioning is, but what's really important? Because I'm having a hard time even finding you in this sacrificial system. I'm having a hard time finding God. And what's going on, the way that we do things in temple these days. I'm tired of the hypocrisy. I'm tired of the hiding. I'm tired of people being the way they are and thinking they're okay like that, and then turning around and judging everybody else. Because Jesus doesn't argue with him. In fact, what Jesus doesn't give him is the law. He gives him the Shema. He gives the thing that you teach your kids when you're just hanging out with them. And you're telling them, you're having them remember the past and the future. You're teaching them to be mindful. Oh, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. No, there's never a commentary on what that means. We want to relegate that to be just a, you know, that God is unique and he's undivided. The Godhead, the Trinity, how they're three but one. But that means something. Well, I'm not going to get into it now, but in house church, we're going to talk about what that means. Oh, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. And the Shema goes on to talk about how you talk about this. You teach your kids who he is, and you teach them to remember, and you're laying down, and you're rising up, and you're walking along the road, and in your daily life, you teach them to be mindful deliberately. And he says, the second is like it. And that's not the law either. That's the national creed. That's the mission statement of Israel. That's the slogan. Kind of like land of the free, home of the brave. The Bible, the whole Bible, and nothing but the Bible. Those are slogans. Those are simple things that you can remember and love your neighbor as yourself was the national motto. Now, I'm certain that people were very good at keeping the Ten Commandments. I'm sure that people were good at keeping temple. I'm pretty sure that people were good at the sacrificial system. I'm sure that they could pull all this stuff off and still remain nincompoops. Still remain judgmental. Still be able to walk by people that were suffering from trauma and sickness and poverty. And folks, good people, upstanding in the community, who were able to walk by. Well, these are wild words that Jesus says, because he doesn't answer what the rich young ruler was saying. The rich young ruler wanted to know, what do I need to do to gain eternal life? What do I need to do to be part? And Jesus gives him some of the Ten Commandments minus the ones about, do you really love God? Is he really first? And at this part of the conversation, what he doesn't do is he doesn't give them those rules. He doesn't give them those laws. He doesn't give them the laws of atonement. He doesn't give them the sacrificial system. He doesn't give them the desert handbook rules, the Ten Commandments. He doesn't give any of those. He says you need to love God, and the second one is exactly like that. If you love people, you are loving God too. They're so interchangeable. They're the same. And this scribe, maybe he's thinking politically. Maybe he's thinking that we've lost that as a nation, and maybe he just hasn't gone all the way. Maybe he understands the fact that I know there's something wrong with the temple system. I know there's something wrong with the sacrificial system. I know there's something wrong in the church today. But maybe he's thinking in terms of maybe the church needs to raise up and take its proper place and be powerful again and be authoritative. Maybe not in the way of sacrificial systems and things like that, but nationally as Israel. And don't we do that today? Because we spend a lot of time, or I spend a lot of time, talking to church people. Why does it always seem like we're evangelizing church people? Evangelism is spreading the good news that the kingdom has arrived. We went to, Tony and I went up to Southern Bucks County and to the meeting about the Code Blue. We met with a bunch of churches. There were, what would you say, maybe 40, 50 people there. Had another panel discussion, talked about what this meant. And they're, don't get me wrong, they are good people. Very, very, very good people who are doing God's work. And they're tired of church as usual. But what they, but their answer to it was what they, and this is not to vilify them. This is needful stuff. But what they wanted to talk about is they wanted to talk about the nuts and bolts of how you go about starting a shelter, how you go about starting a cooperative. You know, who do you call? When, who's going to be the first person that you call? And after that happens, where, who moves the beds and who does this? And all that is necessary. We know that. But I was trying to speak to them about the whys of doing this. I was trying to tell, I was pleading with them to understand that you're already qualified. This isn't about do you have the expertise, and they talk about training. And all of those things, all the nuts and bolts to make the thing work, you know, so that you know putting all the nuts and bolts together so that the car drives. But the important thing that we know is that when we're in the shelter, and these are the words that people really don't hear, is that the important work of the shelter is being friends with people and knowing them. Knowing them so much that we know their trashy parts and we know their good parts, and we can sympathize in certain areas, and other areas we can't go there with them, but we will reach down and pull them along. And there's this, it's so nuanced, the relationship. And trying to communicate that to people and get them to understand that as the church, that's the Shema. That's how you remember. That's how you remember. Become a member again of Christ. And as often as we talk about that, people really didn't necessarily hear, they hear those words, but they, unless we walk with them, they won't know what meaning to pour into those actual words. And so God showed up. Because as I was trying to communicate this in so many dysfunctional ways and disconnected ways, and how much can you really cover in what? 2 hours? How much can you really cover? So I'm pleading. I'm trying to like find the right words that will make people understand what a typical night is like and the way this is and what they're really called to not be professional social workers, but to be the church. And a woman was in right in the middle of the room, and she was giving me thumbs up as I'm talking, everything I said. And she's And she's trying to get noticed. She's putting her hand up in the air and she wants to comment on everything. And she's, you can tell that I don't have to win her over. But she wants to talk. She wants to ask questions. She wants to inform people. And she gets the mic. And she tells people that she was homeless. And she lets them know about a traumatic brain injury she had. And she lets us know at nauseam almost that how her thoughts do not connect very well and that she gets tired and fatigued just from being awake and that she starts to not make sense and she's worried that we won't understand what she's saying. And she uses a lot of words to say very, very little. And she says her piece and the mic floats around and then she wants it again and then the mic floats around and then she wants it again and she's giving me high signs and thumbs up and she understands everything that me and this other pastor were saying and she's right on track with us. And at the end she stands up and very politely and innocently says, I feel like I need to say something. And she takes the mic and starts talking for another God knows how long. And just says the same stuff over and over. And keeps apologizing. And the room, you could sense the discomfort. And the only reason that I'm saying that is it's a confession. I was disquieted. I was uncomfortable. I wanted her to stop. Okay, we heard you. We know what you said. But she kept going. And people were trying to figure out how to get the mic from her and still be nice. And I'm wrestling with God the whole time, and God's saying to me, get over yourself. She ain't hurting anyone. As a matter of fact, as I started to get over myself and started to stop judging her, and as soon as I started tuning into what she was saying, she was just a vivid example of what I was trying to tell them. People in the room, this is who you'll have in the shelter. You'll have people with needs like this who will tell you the same things over and over again. You're going to have people that are going to come and need the attention. She wasn't looking for theology. She wasn't looking to be even a volunteer. She came up to me afterward and she was very worried that just didn't make any sense. And I'm so worried that nobody understood what I said. And I said, you know what? You used a lot of words. You said a lot of words. I said, but God's the one who spoke. Because if people in the room, and this became a discussion afterwards, that people in the room had to know that they were being shown their ministry. You see, we could have kept laws. We could have been efficient. The church could have functioned knowing how to take the sacraments, knowing what the Lord our God is one means, understanding the Hebrew perspective, knowing that there are 3,000 references in the Bible to the way that you care for the poor, and all those factoids mean absolutely nothing without loving your neighbor exactly the way you would love yourself. That somehow God doesn't even get worshipped unless that's the way we become. And there was a very simple woman who taught everybody in that room. including me. So maybe this scribe is feeling that. We do church well. We do temple well. We do everything well. But what's the important thing? I don't know what the important thing is. I'm so lost in church that I don't know what the Father really wants. The word ordination is not some fancy word that we've developed to give ourselves titles. In fact, I think that we've lost the meaning. We've intentionally forgot. We don't remember what that means. But what it means is to agree with God. To see what God agrees with. To see the things that He already says is so. And to just agree with that. When I read the scriptures, it is very interesting to see Jesus' response, because often what he'll do is he'll bait somebody into the wrong answer. Like the rich young ruler. He'll give them the thing that they think they need. And somewhere in there is a bombshell. Because sometimes we don't believe anything unless we answer the question ourselves. If we don't own the answer, we don't really own the answer. So when we ask God questions, sometimes what we're doing is we're trying to get the answer that we want Him to give us. But if He gives us another understanding, another view, if He gives us a way that we can answer the question for ourselves, maybe then things become settled within us. The film that I'm going to show you takes a really roundabout way of showing you that. It's a little campy. It's intended to be that way. But Peter Rollins is a guy that we know here. And I love the way he sees God and cuts right through the malarkey to get through to what Jesus is saying here to this scribe.
You have been listening to Beside Stillwater's netcast. For more information about Stillwater's and its ministries, please visit besidestillwaters.net.